For KOSU, I'm Michael Cross, and it's time for This Week in Oklahoma Politics. With Republican political consultant Neva Hill, and sitting in for Ryan Kiesel is Oklahoma City Democratic Representative Forrest Bennett. Welcome, guys.
Yeah, welcome, Forrest.
Good to see you guys.
On Monday, the state Supreme Court approved an initiative petition which, if it gets enough signatures and passed by voters in November, would increase gross production taxes to 7% for teacher pay raises. The GPT is at the heart of debates over the teacher pay at the state capitol. Neva, where does this put lawmakers in the midst of negotiations?
Well, I think the question is, can they get some sort of a deal that basically would negate the necessity for this state question to move forward for the 90-day period to get those 125,000-plus signatures and ultimately try to get it on the November ballot? So I think it's still kind of a moving target on both ends of this.
And Representative Bennett.
Yeah, I think the Supreme Court decision is probably a great, great tool for those who are pushing for a deal to say, hey, listen, you know, let's get the business community and teachers and state workers together on a plan that includes, you know, a 5% gross production tax, mm-hmm. And we can save the oil and gas industry that 2% loss, because a lot of people believe that ballot measure, should it be on the November ballot, would pass.
Yeah, I talked to floor leader John Eccles, and he says, well, maybe it's a great thing, because then we could raise it up to maybe 4 or 4.5%, and then let the voters decide if they want to just go the extra mile. Do you think maybe that's something like that, something they can use as a bargaining chip?
Well, I mean, Forrest would certainly know better about the bargaining back and forth on the legislative side, but I think that's where we're at. I mean, we continue to see all of these things tossed out on the table. We see the other element of these state questions being infused into the conversation, and I think the bottom line is we're on a fast track to see whether something happens before these deadlines that have kind of been imposed into the process take place.
Do you think something like this, if it was, say, 4 and 4.5%, and they said, well, you know, and then come November we can bump it up to 7 if you want, would that maybe entice you to maybe vote for a package that doesn't go all the way to 5%?
I
know it's hard to say.
Yeah, I'm not ready to say that I would do that, because I firmly believe that, especially now that the oil and gas industry is staring down the potential for the people putting a 7% gross production tax in place, that, you know, were I them, I would go ahead and head off that loss and agree to the 5. But I would also, I just want to, you know, as a Democrat and member of the House, the discussion around the gross production tax is more, of course, we believe that it needs to be higher, but it represents, you know, the imbalance of the tax burden in the state of Oklahoma. And the big sticking point is not just the gross production tax for Democrats. Mm-hmm. It's making sure that a plan that we put in place does not continue to overly burden the working class and shift that tax burden. So I know the conversation has been, head dizzying about the gross production tax, but I just wanted to put some context around it.
Well, and I think the thing also to remember in that context is that the oil and gas industry is the backbone in terms of job creation, in terms of from the economic standpoint in this state. It's something that, I mean, we can see all of these folks bash it all day long, but at the end of it, I mean, the loss of those jobs, the loss of, you know, the ancillary jobs that come from, you know, across Oklahoma that are related to oil and gas, I mean, I think that's part of the equation too. So, I mean, it's not an either-or proposition. It's very tangled up and dizzying, I think, as was mentioned, in terms of trying to get past the rhetoric and get down to how do we get to a deal.
There's been no shortage of plans released from lawmakers to provide a teacher pay raise to avoid a teacher walkout. Representative Bennett, do you do any of these plans have any traction? You've got the Bergstrom plan. You've got a plan from Earl Sears and the Bartlesville schools. Is any of them clicking with anybody?
Well, the Bartlesville plan is I think Earl Representative Sears begrudgingly endorsed a plan that involved 5% earlier this week, but it wasn't his plan. It was the Bartlesville teachers putting that together. That's a great starting place. And there are a few other, there are several conversations happening, and I'm very hopeful that something will come together next week. I'm happy that the Capitol is talking about different plans. It would be incredibly helpful, and I hope that teacher organizations are listening. if they had specific revenue asks. You know, I've heard many of them say, well, we don't like it when you tell us how to do our job, so we're not going to tell you how to do ours. Mm-hmm. And if I were sitting where they were, I would feel that the legislature didn't know how to do their job, so I would be more than happy to offer my opinions.
Neva, lots of bills out there or proposals out there. Do you think that something might actually be able to come through?
Well, I think here's the deal. You've got all of these proposals, and you've got some that people will say, okay, on the House side, it's dead on the Senate when it goes to the Senate. You've got Senate deals that the Senate can get done, but you get to the House side, it's dead on arrival. So, I mean, at some point, you've got to get a compromise deal. You've got to get something that not only gets the Republicans in the majority in both the House and the Senate, but Democrats that can come across and say, this is, you know, again, a compromise deal. It's not what any of us, it's not our first choice, maybe not our second choice, but we've got to get something done. And I think that would be far better than having a teacher strike, whatever the number of days that would be. I mean, they can look at West Virginia and say, yes, they stayed out 9 days, they came back in, they got the 5% across the board. Everybody kind of felt like they were in the winning position in terms of on the education side. Will that happen in Oklahoma? I don't know, because it moves from being help teachers in the classroom, help education, help 700,000 school kids, to a teacher union strike, and I think that changes the whole flavor and composition for a lot of Oklahomans.
Go ahead.
Well, I wanted to. I'm glad you brought up West Virginia. Yes, they did eventually get the raise that they were asking for. Unfortunately, that money came. My understanding is that money came from Medicaid funding in West Virginia. So they did in fact hurt one class of you know, lower middle class people to help, or you know, lower than lower class. I mean, you know, Medicaid users, people who really can't afford anything extra, and they put that teacher raise on the backs of people who can least afford it. And that's exactly what we're trying to avoid here, which is why specific asks from the education community would be helpful. But to the point about the compromise, you know, I mean, all of these plans, there's no illusion that the Democrats are holding out for something that's a perfect plan for them. If you look at what all of the plans have in common, you're talking about a gas and diesel tax, you're talking about a cigarette tax, and these are taxes that are by definition regressive and that Democrats have a hard time swallowing. But we're willing to do those things if you can get, you know, an income tax adjustment or a gross production tax in there, something that balances it out to make sure that it's more fair on the pocketbooks of the working class.
I'm talking about healthcare, though. The idea of passing a cigarette tax without that money going to healthcare instead of going to education, I think a lot of lawmakers on both sides of the aisle might find that hard to swallow.
Yes, I would agree with that. And to have a gas and diesel tax go to something that's not, you know, roads and bridges and infrastructure investment. And as you know, mass public transit is one of my big passions, and I would like to see every cent of road related, vehicle related tax go toward that system. Mm-hmm. And so, if I were king for a day, we would have enough funding from all of these avenues to fund everything fully, because education is in crisis state. And I get emails from people who are saying, why are you focusing, why are you passing bills in any other area when education is such a crisis? Well, a competent government is able to take care of multiple crises at a time. Well, a super competent government doesn't have too many crises on their hands, but
hopefully there is no crisis at all.
Right.
Speaking of different parts of the government, the director of the Department of Corrections, Joe Albaugh, went before the Senate Appropriations Committee calling on lawmakers to provide $800 million in bonds to build new prisons. Chairman Kim David told Albaugh there might be an appetite for prison bonds if there truly is a need. Representative Bennett, do you think there's a possibility of the legislature approving bonds for new prisons?
You know, I would hope that it's a last case scenario. Mm-hmm. And I know we can't go back, but you know, true criminal justice reform would have been able to preempt this. And other comments that Mr. Albaugh has said have been to the effect of, if you would stop sending me so many people, I could deal with the facilities that I have now. I don't want to see us build a lot of new prisons and then implement criminal justice reform and have those prisons, be an extra burden on the state. So if we need it, I understand, and I would have to look at that specifically, when it comes up. But again, Oklahomans want criminal justice reform. 780 and 781 were a step in the right direction, but they were by no means the end-all be-all, and I'm hoping that we will continue to march down that path.
Neva?
Well, I think right now when you look at just the state facilities, state prisons, 153% capacity, according to Director Albaugh. When you have 115% of capacity, if you add in the private prisons into the equation, I mean, clearly there's an issue. Will criminal justice reform long term begin to change the need for the number of beds? Yes, I mean, I think that looking long term, that is a real possibility. But right now, in terms of antiquated facilities, in terms of the need, I think what we heard from the appropriations and budget chair in the Senate this week is basically, look, if we are going to bond something, facilities is what it should be. And she, Kim David, made the point that there is recent history in that. We had the state health lab that was bonded, I believe, just last year. Mm-hmm. And we are at a place where they just recently paid off bonds that I think were $36 million a year. So I mean, when you look at that, they're already saying that that basically would be a trade off with these two minimum security, medium security prisons, male and female, that are being proposed. So I think it's timely. I think it is when you look at just from an efficiency standpoint, if you put state-of-the-art facilities in, it's going to be better in terms of efficiency. It's going to be better, it's a much better cost, cost utilization for the state. And it's going to be better for those workers in those facilities in terms of the number of workers needed, as well as the safety issues that are always present and talked about by the director in terms of the correction system in Oklahoma.
Yeah, I've toured a couple of the facilities that we have, including the maximum security down in McAllister, and I can tell you, for sure, we need newer and better facilities. And I would love to see these designed such that as we lower our prison population through reforms and other things, that we're able to transition some of those facilities into some type of true rehabilitation for mental health, substance abuse, and things like that. So, The key would be being sure that we are being innovative as possible. Because if there's a state that can try innovative solutions and be truly successful, it's a state that has the burden that we have. And I mean, I think you can look at it in a negative way, or you can look at it as we are in a unique position to create some innovative solutions.
Oklahoma Attorney General Mike Hunter joins 13 other states in calling on U.S. Department of Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross to reinstate a question regarding citizenship on the U.S. Census. Hunter says the question was removed from the 2010 census, and he wants it returned to the one coming up in 2020. Neva, why is this important?
Well, I think that Attorney General Hunter, along with his colleagues in these other states, made some really key points. I mean, first of all, when you look at congressional districts, as determined by the number of citizens in those districts, you have to be sure that you've got the right voter population. And in determining that, this is a key component in that, as he raised. You've got federal funds for programs for elderly, for children, for lower income. Those can be disproportionately affected, if we don't have the proper information coming out from the census. You've got the current method of collection is just not accurate. I mean, I think that's their overarching theme, when you look at all of the recommendations and the issues that they raise. And under the current system, I mean, you really have a question of the reliability of the information overall. So, I mean, I think the issues that the Attorney General raises are legitimate issues. I think they are fair issues that need to be, very seriously addressed. And hopefully, I mean, this is not just Oklahoma talking about it. It's multiple states looking at it and trying to appeal to the Commerce Secretary to take this into consideration and make this change.
Representative Bennett.
Well, I like A.G. Hunter, and I was pleased when he was appointed for this, and I think that I've enjoyed his work on opioids and things like that. Mm-hmm. This smells to me of a bit of campaign-related stuff, and it's frustrating. I agree with Neva that we have an outdated census system, and we need to fix that. I'm just not sure that adding a question regarding citizenship will be the fix for that.
But the question was always there until just this last census.
Sure, my.
You worry that it sounds like more like politicking.
It does seem like politicking, and that's coming from a politician. But My view is that when you have people in your community, they all need to be taken care of. I'll be interested to see this play out, but I just don't see the urgency of it the way some people do.
Is there concern that if someone sees a citizenship question, they refuse to answer because of fear that then they might, ICE is going to come in and immediately deport them, that kind of thing? That's why it was left off, is that, do you think?
Those fears are already there. I mean, when I, you know, I have a large swath of the South Side in my district, and when I was knocking, you know, you've got a 6'6" blonde guy coming to your door, a lot of people were already scared. They didn't know what I was there for. And so I approach this issue from a bit of a delicate perspective because of the people that I represent. And many of them are hardworking citizens who have family members who are not. And there is just a lot of fear there. And I'm not interested in forcing any additional stress into their lives.
The Senate Intelligence Committee, including Oklahoma Republican James Lankford, warns of issues with our elections after announcing Russians scanned 21 state election systems. The committee put forth recommendations to thwart future threats. Neva, how worried should Oklahomans be?
Well, I don't know that we should be worried. I think we should be aware. And I think this was basically the takeaway that Senator Lankford and the people on the Intelligence Committee came up with, you know, a very comprehensive look at this and, you know, very serious. He said, who will it be next? I mean, if it's not the Russians, is it the Iranians? Is it the North Koreans? I mean, is it some local, you know, homegrown group that is trying to interfere with elections? So it's a very important question that I think the seriousness of it, they have certainly taken into account. I think when you look at one of the points that I think was made by Senator Lankford was that in Oklahoma, we're the largest state that has what is called a uniform voting system. In other words, all of our polling locations and all of our machines are the same. They're not connected, you know, by the internet. They're independent, but they also have an auditing process because you have the paper component. You have the way to have that verification. And so I think as states look, and it's key to remember that it is incumbent upon the states to do this. It's not federal. It's not the federal government's job to conduct elections. It's each individual state's responsibility to do this, and I think it does kind of put the focus back where it needs to be, and it does, I think, point to the fact that all states, I think without exception, are taking this very seriously, and I think the Senate has done an excellent job in trying to go through a lot of information and then give a very discerning, a very straightforward look at this without any political sense, you know, trying to sensationalize it and see where we go from here in the future elections.
I know hanging chads or pregnant chads. We now, actually, our election system is actually fairly new, only in the past, I think, 5 or 6 years compared to here. I was hearing about decades old election systems out there. So ours is a lot safer than I think a lot of other states.
Yeah, I'm happy to be talking about something that we can have some pride in. And in the state of Oklahoma, we do have one of the better systems in the state or in the country. And people should feel much more comfortable voting in Oklahoma and know that their vote itself is safe. My bigger concerns are in the influencing of voters that happened and was
with Facebook and
which was just very invasive in 2016. And I am sure that those who perpetrated that learned from it and will be coming back even harder this next time, which is why it's so important to have unbiased news. But it's also really important. So thank you, KSU. But it's also important to be vigilant in that respect.
Sure.
The recent news about Facebook and Cambridge Analytica, those things are very concerning. I know we all live in an era where we know that a lot of our information is out there. How we proceed in this way is going to be really important. So I think that, you know, moving forward, yes, election security is incredibly important, but that opinion influencing prior to is also really important. So I hope that we will give just as much attention to that.
Neva, did the word news about Facebook and Cambridge Analytica bother you at all?
I think we know that a lot of that, as you say, lot of that's been out there in terms of mining information, trying to find out what the voters think and what moves them. I mean, some of those elements are just part of the campaign side of the process. But there's a right way and a wrong way to do everything. So I think, you know, it does speak to the kind of the higher question, and that is for the voter of being much more aware and much more engaged and much more proactive in not only finding their information and deciding what, you know, what they believe and don't believe and what they think is accurate and true and not. And I think that, and I think that's where we're going to see in this upcoming election, are voters really engaged? I mean, have they really just kind of written it all off and tuned it out? I don't think so. I think the American people understand that we have a very important sacred right of voting, and hopefully we will take it to the next level rather than just dumb down, you know, and think that this just affords us no opportunity to really have a say, because I think anyone, just like Forrest, has been out knocking doors and had a majority of the people in his district say, you're the person we want to go represent us at the state capitol. That's the process that we all still believe in and want to see upheld and want to see everything done to afford that we do have fair and honest elections. And I think what we're seeing more and more of is a lot of this confused rhetoric. I think people may start to see through and ultimately say, you know, at the end of the day, I have my vote. It's important, and I'm going to go exercise it.
Well, I appreciate you pointing out that I won my election. I'm pleased that I did, but I will be first to admit that, you know, that there wasn't a majority of my constituents that, yeah, that voted for me. I mean, you know, every district is 36,000-37,000 people, and the turnout for my election was far below that. And that's not because I'm not necessarily an exciting candidate. I thought, you know, my hair looked great every time.
Unfortunately, Oklahoma voters have not proven to be percentage-wise high voting.
And that's across the country. But as a progressive person who's gone to a lot of organizational meetings over the last several months, I will tell you I am very excited about the level of interest from people who were previously unengaged. And so the litmus test will, of course, be the midterm elections that are coming up. We have a great Democrat candidate in CD5, so I think that we will really see where people are as far as their political opinions in the Oklahoma City metro area, but across the country as well. And I think it'll be I think it's good for Republicans, Democrats, Americans, Oklahomans. You know, I'm sure Republicans will win a few seats that they didn't last time. Democrats hopefully will win some seats they didn't last time. But the discussion around it will be more robust and hopefully more intellectual than sort of just punchy in the face, right, you know.
Aniva and Representative Bennett's comments do not necessarily reflect the views of KOSU, its staff, or management.